Thank you. Maybe not a question, but just to compensate a little bit for the shameful assistance of the international community with regard to the refugees, when you speak about Turkey and its $2 or $3 billion, I would like to say that the ICRC has one of its biggest operations in Syria, with over $100 million, I think. Not only in Syria, of course, in other refugee camps, but it's not so bad with the international community.
But the international community does a lot through in Jordan and Lebanon too. It's I was just drawing attention to the disparity, and as we go forward, it's not clear to us that Turkey is going to be able to sustain what it has been doing so far, despite the natural generosity of the country and its people.
More questions?
Is the Syrian conflict with the Kurdish component, which is in the Syrian conflict, obviously, changing the Turkish view of options they have regarding a solution for the Kurdish question?
Yes and no. Yes, last year. No, this year. Last year they thought, gosh, the Kurds are going to be are an emerging force in Syria. I don't want to have trouble on two flanks. And so they reactivated their peace process with the Turkish-Kurdish insurgency, which is very closely linked to the group that is creating this peace, this island of peacefulness, which Michael described in Hasake and the Jazeera. However, the demands of the Kurdish side are still quite high for Ankara. And Ankara is still not convinced that it has to go that far. So even though they restarted the talks have not gone far enough. And although we don't believe that the either side wants to restart the insurgency in Turkey, the ceasefire is becoming increasingly fragile. And the process is stalled. The peace process is stalled.
You said that
the Turks don't want to become a police state. Do you mean the Turkish people or the Turkish government? Or both?
I think both. And I don't think they're able to become as much of a police state as they once were. I mean, it's the idea, you know, Turkey feels like a police state perhaps to those who are used to a highly educated, homogenous European country. And obviously Turkey uses different methods to control. It's much rougher kind of environment, and that does have police state characteristics, but there is quite a lot of freedom in Turkey nevertheless, to go where you like, and certainly for foreigners to go where they like. And to control that would require checkpoints, would require policemen who could speak foreign languages, and so it's an ability. And you know, it's true that the Turkish government officially is still trying to conform to all that European acquis reform process that it is officially part of, and going back to being a police state is a very difficult, you know, would really feel like going backwards.
Well, if Erdogan wants to do this, what you say, to fulfill this, he's hiding
his... The real question was, does Erdogan want to go back to a police state or not?
Yes.
He would like to if he could. I mean, he would like to be, he already is the sole power in Turkey. And it's mainly because of him that the European Union process has stopped, because he has no interest in more freedom of the press, more independence of the judiciary, or transparency of the contracts and procurement tenders that his government gives out, and which we all know, thanks to all the leaks, we know that have been entirely corruptly handled. But that doesn't mean to say that the state organs of the state don't wish to be a higher performing country. I mean, Turkey is not a rentier state, as was described earlier. Turkey lives on its tax income and its ability to raise money in international markets. Now, you can bend the Fitches and Moody's and Standard & Poor's of this world just so far, but at a certain point, you have to look as that you have to, there has to be a certain reality underlying the marketing message of Turkey as a market and democratic country. And once Turkey starts giving up on that kind of things, then borrowing becomes more expensive, life becomes harder for everybody, and the Turkish state sees that. They are absolutely aware of the dangers of what Erdogan is doing, but politically, with a prime minister who can win 45, 50% of the vote, there's nothing that anybody can do about it until something happens to him.
Yeah. Okay, more questions?
Did you really say that maybe Turkey goes for reconciliation with Assad to solve the problem in the northern area?
I suggested that there was one person in Ankara who was pretty senior that raised that possibility. It is impossible, it is inconceivable as long as Erdogan is in charge.
Okay.
But then there will be a new government. He's going to become the president, presumably in August. We will have a new government of some kind. We don't know. It will be an opportunity for a new government to start afresh. Of course, he's going to still be very powerful, but we may have new overtones. It's, as I tried to explain, you know, it's a very dangerous, insecure environment for Turkey at the moment because they have mismanaged the Syria policy so appallingly.
Well, another question. The Israeli Mossad or the security establishment in Israel just estimates the conflict to go on for another 10 years or so. Mm. Do you think this is accurate?
Our people who go to Damascus think exactly the same, yes. And no one knows what to do about it. It's like a forest fire burning out of control. And what the crisis group we are trying to do is build fire breaks around wherever we can see something that can be changed, an opening to Russia, an opening to Iran, somehow Turkey hardening its border. We're trying to persuade Turkish officials, look, we understand you have to support the opposition, but at least make it conditional on good behavior. And indeed, that has changed. I don't know whether you noticed the latest attack at Kasap, the Armenian village, over Hatay. There was a big Armenian brouhaha about it, not surprising that Armenians are very sensitive about what happens. But our people in Syria say that there's no evidence that any deliberate attacks on individuals of that Armenian village happened. In fact, the defining characteristic of that attack, which was clearly carried out with apparent Turkish air cover and came right over the Turkish border, was that all religious sites were respected and that the opposition behaved properly. And if Turkey can manage that trick, then I think that they will somehow regain some of their lost leverage over the situation.
It stays as it is. There is no chance for schooling for a new generation, for the whole young generation.
They call it the lost generation now. It's like all these revolutions and wars in the Middle East. The usual result is that you lose a generation or two of your middle classes. They all go, because these 30,000 that are being discussed with Europe, you can be sure that they are the doctors, the engineers, the nice people that will be chosen by the Europeans, not the half-literate farmers. And why is the war in the northern Syria so desperately ugly? Well, these are very uneducated people who are terrified and trying to make other people even more terrified so they won't attack them. But the middle class is gone. We at Crisis Group, we used to have lots of interlocutors in Syria. My colleagues say they have very few people left to talk to that they knew from before. It's a disaster. Then you look at every revolution in the Middle East, 52 in Egypt, 58 in Iraq, 60 in Syria, and then 75 in Lebanon, 79 in Iran. Each time is accompanied by a tidal wave of the best people leaving. And you could actually even say with Turkey in 1915 and before that whole, in 1923 with the Greeks and Armenians who were the middle classes of Turkey basically in those days, and Turkey lost the lot and had to rebuild its whole middle class. And it's taken 90 years to get to where we are today. And do you think how long will it take for Syria to get back? I mean, Syria was like a corner of the Ottoman Empire preserved in some miracle potion. And it's now torn itself apart. And it will not come back the same way as it was.
And what is your advice to the foreign decision makers? Just leave it burning?
Well,
that is what's happening now.
Well, you can't. But what we're trying to do is to say to the United States, well, see. Obviously, this is not an argument that's going to go very far, man. But look, if you try and exclude Russia, look what happens. If you insist on having this blood feud with Iran to eternity, which, as we discussed from the Ulrich, this is what you will get. You will not be able to control it. And of course, poor old Syria, what you have is, for years, Syria has played off everyone against everyone else by using its position. And now the table has just turned over and everyone is playing off their battles in sights.
Well, I can only wish that they are, in the end, going to read your reports. And thank you very, very much for coming here.